This episode of Hubble Holding Up is brought to you by Luna's Llama Adventures.
What in the blue blazes is that, Steph?
Well, Andrew, I'm glad you asked. Luna's Llama Adventures is a new local company that offers you cute, cuddly llamas as trail companions, so you can trek through Humboldt's beautiful landscapes without having to carry your own stuff.
Now, that just sounds like a recipe for a winning nature selfie, if you ask me.
That's right. It's a very Insta-worthy, that's what the kids say these days, way to travel. So check them out at lunaslamaadventures.com. That's LUNASLLAMA adventures, in case you didn't know how to spell llamas.
There's two L's for some reason. It's crazy. It's Humble Holding Up, the Lost Coast Outpost, always optimistic, always forward-looking, always happy, happy, happy podcast. My name is Andrew Goff.
I'm Stephanie McGarry. I 100% agree with you. We are always happy and optimistic on this podcast all of the time.
It's required.
We live in Humboldt. It's great. Yeah. And Humboldt has oh so many great things on the horizon right now, right? We have all these cool projects. We have the fiber optic internet cable
coming
all the way from Singapore. We have Nordic Aqua Farms. We have the Polytechnic University.
We have a lot of things that could have a positive economic impact for this county long-term on the horizon. And so to discuss what some of those potential effects could be, we reached out to Greg Foster. Now, Greg Foster is the executive director of the Redwood Regional Economic Development Commission. So we wanted to tap Greg and see how he's feeling as optimistic about things as other people we are talking to seem to feel.
Let's get him in here. Thanks so much for joining us, Greg.
My pleasure.
You guys, we were just thinking that maybe to start off, you know, for our listeners, that you could explain a little bit about who you are. Who is Greg? Yeah. what the Redwood Regional Economic Development Commission does,
right,
and your role there. I believe you're executive director.
I am.
Yeah.
I am executive director.
Yeah. So could just tell us a little bit about what you all do over there.
Sure. So REDEC, I'll call it
REDEC,
Redwood Region Economic Development Commission, but we'll call it REDEC for short. It was started in 1977, and it was started when they were expanding Redwood National Park, and that was kind of controversial. And so as part of that, the government gave the county of Humboldt about $40 million in economic adjustment or economic development money. And that money, so REDEC was formed to kind of decide how that money was going to go, you know, where it was going to go. And so it was made up of a lot of elected officials. In fact, the last remaining elected official still alive who signed the original agreement was Alex Stillman, back when she was mayor of the city of Arcata back in the day. It was Alexandra Fairless at the time. But anyway, so I always tell her she's the last remaining person alive who signed that document. She was obviously very young at the time, I think in junior high, which is amazing. She's an amazing person to start being mayor of Arcata at the age of 12. But anyway, so it was $40 million. So they spent it on various public works and infrastructure projects. They built the new, which is now the old part of the terminal at the airport. There's some money in Woodley Island and down in Fields Landing and all this various things. And it was not, REDEC was not meant to last. It was going to be sort of a single purpose thing to split up the money. But one of the things they did was, let's create a revolving loan fund. And so they require, you know, it was to provide loans to businesses who couldn't get it through banks, basically. And so that was in 77, 78, 79, when they're kind of going through that process, and they set up this loan program. And immediately, like, lost half of the money in the first two or three years just because they made bad loans. I got here back in 1999. I've actually quit this job twice. and one time to go work at, believe it or not, Lost Coast Communications from 07 to 09. I came back, and then I went to work at Redwood Capital Bank for a few years as a commercial lender over there. And then Came back here in 2015. So I've been here off and on since 1999. And now we still do the loan program, although we, you know, we're a little bigger than we were back then. We have about 76 loans out right now to 61 different businesses. Total lending is about $9 million that's out right now. We probably are we have a total lending capacity of about 14 or 15 million. And that's with the Headwaters funds and some other funds to participate in. And then we do a lot of other work around regional policy and projects. And of course we sponsor and support the Fly Humboldt, efforts up at the airport.
So I think for our purposes today, we can, you know, say that Humboldt's economic health is high on your priority list.
Correct. I mean, that's...
Yes. Yeah. So, Greg, summer's here, and I think the time is right for, I don't know, emerging from our pandemic holes that we've been hibernating in for 15 months. Right. But even more than just the end of the COVID hell, I feel like Humboldt in the know people I chat with are feeling pretty good about our county's prospects economically and otherwise. And, you know, since being hopeful is kind of a big part of your thing. Can I assume that you are a member of this feeling good about things class?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. One way I chart, you know, whether or not I can be optimistic or not is I, you know, every year I go with the airport person, and it's Cody Ruggets, who's doing a great job up there. My God, you know, he's just, you know, overwhelmed with all this new service and everything that's going on up there and really handling it well. But we go and do these airline meetings every year, two or three times. We meet with the different airlines at these airline meeting conferences. And part of our presentation, we have a very detailed business case for new service or continued service or expanded service. And I'm responsible for putting the economic and community data together, the slides. And, you know, in the past, it's, you know, you always want to, you're pitching, right? You're selling. So it's like, hey, come to Humboldt County. It's, you know, all this stuff's happening. And, you know, we're really kind of, sometimes we're struggling a little bit to find those headlines that convinces an airline to make a multi-million dollar investment in our community. Well, this year, we're doing it next week. We're going to meet with five airlines next week. And I was putting those slides together, and it was like, oh, you know, the state budget just passed, you know, this hasn't gone through the Senate yet, but, you know, $330 million or whatever it was for the university. And Google is completing a $7 billion fiber project that's going to end in Eureka, that's now connecting to another fiber project from Vero that built a data center. It's going to go over, you know, and then $11 million from the state for this, and Nordic, you know, $400 million for this. And, you know, those are great headlines. What? You're who?
Yeah.
You know, you're a little rural county, and you're talking, you know, we're talking beyond millions of investment now. We're talking billions.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, that's pretty cool. And they love to see that.
Well, that's kind of what I'm hoping to talk about a little bit today. I want to offer people sort of like a buffet of these projects that are floating around out there that have the potential to have a big effect on Humboldt. I have seven items here. You've mentioned a few of them that I'm hoping we can just do is just go through these and talk about, you know, the likelihood that these things will come to pass, and two, what kind of impact they could have on Humboldt.
I
try to be adorable, Greg, you know. It's like
and my son just graduated in physics from UCSC last weekend, and that's how they do math. A, two, sigma, squiggly,
right,
you know, stuff. All right. Greg, I don't know
totally
what that
works out.
Yeah. Okay, so
quite honestly, you talk, so I just listen.
Yeah. So yeah, so are you pumped for this? You just go through this list?
Yep, let's do it. Let's do it. Okay. Bring it on.
Whoa, right. Woo. Okay. Let's do it.
I'm
fast.
Losing my top button on my shirt here. I'm
Okay. Yeah, here we go.
Let me take a drink.
I was gonna say loosen the take a drink.
Okay.
Take a shot. All right. Well, so one of the things that you mentioned that is definitely one of the big upcoming projects that will surely have significant impacts on our area is the high-speed fiber optic cable that will run all the way from Singapore landing on our Samoa Peninsula.
Yes.
And that is also connected to a data center currently under construction in Arcata.
Right.
And I believe that the Vero Networks folks are doing some work right now, right. Or at least they were recently laying down conduit and on Old Arcata Road, and they've been correct. Doing that through Arcata as well. So, we all know that this is big, but maybe you can talk, explain to us, you know, why exactly? What does this mean? What does this actually mean for our area?
Well, it's funny because I got involved in the broadband fight about 1999, 2000. We were trying to get the first fiber optic line here. And those were the bad old days when the weather was bad, you couldn't call outside the county, you know, things like that. Those of us who are, you know, a little more gray in the face will remember those days. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in 20 years, which seems like a long time, except I just turned 56, so it feels like a short time. You know, now we're talking about this, you know, Google building this, the world's longest fiber optic cable. And if you go to their website, it, you know, it shows Singapore, Eureka, you know, with kind of a line going between. It's like, yeah. Eureka.
Right.
That's cool. Yeah. And that's going to intertie with Vero's network. And they're building to the data center, and then we'll be building over the hill. We call it the 299. It's not exactly along the highway the whole way, but the 299 project. And that will be our, you know, big third connection. The second being, so the first was 101 back in the early aughts. the second was the completion of the Highway 36 project, which, you know, I worked on with a whole bunch of other people. And now this one's coming. And so it's an amazing opportunity because this is the first transcontinental fiber that we'll have. And there are a lot of opportunities for interties. You know, as I understand it, the data center in Arcata is going to be kind of like an internet hotel. So a lot of different companies can use and connect to the servers there, connect to the network there. And then there's off ramps, you know, off that 299 project that are be critical for projects up in the Hoopa area. I mean, all along their abilities to tie into that. And you're right in this robust, huge network. We're not dealing with, you know, having to run it through those other networks. And it creates the, you know, the reason we did 36 was to create an alternative route so you could have the chance for redundancy. That allows us not to do what we did right after the first fiber was installed. We had four outages in a year because the fiber got broken. And you talk about craziness. I mean, it was just like nothing worked. You know, I couldn't get into the ATM, nothing worked because everything was right there.
Great.
So it's exciting. Yeah, it's exciting. And what it does is it creates base infrastructure that we can sell, right? We can say, you know, to companies or communities, and this is public benefit as well as private benefit. You know, we've got the thing here we need. You know, it's like you want to come. We don't have to wait 20 years to develop it. We've got this robust network. So, you know, people kind of say, well, what kind of businesses will be using it? And I always say, I don't know. Because we don't even know what businesses are coming or was created. I mean, you know, we would think of, you know, Netflix or Hulu or something like that 10 years ago. No, I mean, so it not only creates opportunities for the types of businesses that already exist, but it creates a framework and an infrastructure base by which as new things are developed and happen, we can participate in that where we couldn't before. So, yeah, I'm very excited about that. It's all private money, too, which is great. So the companies see the value of doing this through here, which is important for us.
Can you speak a little bit to like why Humboldt? Why Samoa? Why was this the place that was they were able to connect?
Why not Humboldt, man? It's great.
Well,
why
are you know. Down? Yeah. Sorry.
Sure.
Well, there's some advantages just in terms of location and logistics. So location, you know, it's hard to get some of these fiber landings elsewhere in California just because of competition or lack of facilities. You know, we years ago made what I think was a great decision and one that was criticized quite highly by segments of the community about buying the old pulp mill, right? And they bought it for a dollar. Well, you know, it was bought for a dollar, but it was had millions of dollars that needed to be invested to clean it up. And they worked with the EPA to do that. So now we have this large publicly owned infrastructure so that the Harbor District can say, yeah, we'll lease to you. We can lease to you. And you know, the same thing with Nordic, you know, Nordic coming in. And then there were some permitting I guess, made it easier to run along that outfall pipe, or, you know, that went out. There's a mile and a half outfall pipe that, you know, is permitted, and they can run next to that. And then there's this 299 project that another company was working on and had gotten a large state subsidy, but they ended up, you know, basically selling their work to Vero, and Vero is not using that state subsidy and doing it privately. So I just think it's like a lot of different pieces came together, but it wasn't serendipity, right? It was like long-term thinking from a number of entities here who said, if we want this stuff kind of to happen, we need to invest in making, creating conditions where it can happen quickly. And so if we still had a, you know, decrepit privately owned pulp mill over there with the tanks probably still leaking and everything else, there's no way anybody would want to get near that place, right? But the mm-hmm. Harbor District made that risky decision.
Yeah.
And now it's paying off. No risk, no reward. Well, risk and reward.
I think when I tell people about this, you know, their questions are, does this mean I will have faster internet? And what kind of jobs will this, you know, provide?
Right. Well, and I want to add one more thing to my previous answer was, we have a very strong advocate with the Humboldt State University and Connie Stewart up there who are, you know, really taking the lead on keeping us in the forefront of the broadband discussion at the state level. And mm-hmm. I think that also captures people's attention. And Connie's a great troubleshooter. You know, she's like, there's something in the way, man. She'll plow right through it. And so they're doing a great job up there at Humboldt State to make this happen. So, you know, do I get better broadband? You know, the better the network, the better the broadband, quite honestly. Yeah. But it's really up to, of course, and this is kind of a regulatory thing, you know, and there's a lot of discussion around this at the federal level about, and even at the state level about, you know, how much telecoms can hold on to their markets and not allow competition. And as you get down to the minutia about, you know, what's considered served and underserved and what are data speeds and all that. And there are some regulatory and legislative hurdles to really getting some great service out to areas like ours that are more remote, and they don't see the return on investment. But, you know, at the same time, they want to lock it up because they don't like to give away market share. So there's some regulatory barriers and some stuff in the way of those higher speeds, maybe, in certain areas. But the more robust the network, you know, the better speed you can offer. I mean, I have 400 meg service at my house, right? I mean, and it's not quite delivering 400, it's 400 advertised, but there are times when I'm getting up to 300 plus at my house. You know, I remember when I had an ISDN line here, and I was wowing people with that, or a T1 with a 1 meg service, and it was like, my God, the speed is amazing. You know, look at that. It only takes like a few seconds for that picture to download, you know, and you can stream some very low res video. So that being said, you know, at the time we were just like, you know, how much more do you need than a meg? You know, what kind of jobs? I mean, it can be anything, right? I mean, we learned when the outages occurred, what year was that? I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, that almost every job was affected by bad internet connections, right? Because literally the first one was like a wind, you know, was rubbing the fiber optic line down by Willits and broke the line. And it was a day after Christmas, and the mall shut down. Gas stations didn't work. Nothing. Oof, you know, we couldn't call. I was working at Cahom at the time, or Lost Coast, and because that's in Ferndale, we couldn't call the station. But I had a cell phone that still kind of worked, and so like the owner called me at home and asked me to like walk down to the station and see what was going. I mean, it was a you know, I think the technical term was complete shit show. And so when people ask me what kind of jobs are affected, it's like almost anything that involves a transaction, right? Yeah. I mean, there's high-end jobs where you're programming and doing some amazing data work and all this other stuff, but it's like, oh, we can't take credit cards today, or the ATM isn't working, or the gas station isn't working, or we can't even make phone calls. So I think everybody's affected by it, quite honestly. It's really base infrastructure. It's like sewer and water anymore, right? Broadband's like sewer and water. Yeah. And you think about, you know, like the last year in the pandemic when, you know, kids were at home trying to study, you know, broadband became like the only way you can learn, right? And so it was like, wow. And that really kind of, I think, I mean, I do want to find a silver lining in the pandemic. And I think it brought up that issue and a lot of other issues about, wow, we really, really need to work on at the state and federal level.
Yeah, we rely on this more than we know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So fiber optic cable too. And I realized that to get on all these items on my list, we're going to have to speed through these. So next.
Shorter answers, Greg.
Okay. Yeah. Come on, Jesus. All right. So next on my list, and this one seems pretty likely it's going down. Humboldt Polytechnic. This is Newsom's plan to retool HSU to have a larger focus on science and engineering realms of study. Also cannabis, this week. The governor has allocated $433 million to this project in his proposed budget that, as you said, still has to get through the state legislature. What about this, Greg? This seems like a big one.
Yeah, and I think the new budget bill has $338 million in it for this.
Okay, did they
knock it down? Way through the process. Yeah, super cool. And what I liked about that, and this will be short, is there was a lot of money in there for development of housing as well. That wasn't just building buildings and hiring people. But yeah, super cool. They want to like double the size of the student body over time and want to do housing development both on campus and off campus at some of the properties they purchased. And what a great thing. And, you know, Humboldt State it's such a unique place and it's such a unique school that really playing to the strengths of the area and playing the strengths of the sort of the culture of the student body, I think is awesome. And it's huge. I mean, what's crazy is, you know, when we had some declining enrollment, obviously for a number of years, and the naysayers were like, you know, I heard that the state's going to close down Humboldt State University. And I was like,
yeah, people did.
Can you be more full of crap? You know, you have no idea. Where'd you hear it? You know, comment on a Facebook posting or something like that.
Yes.
And the thing is, quite honestly, is I think that the people that said that, and I heard it from more than one, would have liked that to happen. You know?
There is kind of a weird obsession with people that want Humboldt to fail. I see this out on the, as you say, mostly Facebook, but
I got to stay out of those comment threads.
You do.
They're terrible.
Yeah. Okay. Why would people want that? I do think that some people here definitely fear the change too, you know, that's a little, you know, maybe not quite as far as wanting to see the place you live fail, but, you know, some of the change, the fear of change can be a little bit understandable. You know, people don't want to see the place they live, you know, get too populated or see, you know, prices go up too much or all those kinds of things.
Valid concerns. But I think for a lot of people, they always say they only know what they've already done or seen. And can't imagine what's going on, you know, what can be. And so there's a real scarcity, poverty mentality. Like if someone else is succeeding here because it's a zero sum game, then something else must be getting hurt. And that could be me. And a lot of people, you know, their vision only extends to the end of their own nose. And they just can't quite understand the possibilities. Now, I've lived here all my life. I mean, they go, well, you come in here with your big city ideas. Well, yeah, I grew up in Miranda. My first address was Avenue of the Giants, you know.
Yeah. People really say that to you? Come in here with your big city ideas.
See, you people from the urban areas. When I was in Cahum, was talking about Southern Humboldt, and someone called in and said, that guy doesn't know anything about Southern Humboldt. And then Mike Dronkers is on. He's like, you know, he was born in Everville.
Ah, nice. Yeah. That must have felt good. Well, of course, you did also already talk about this a bit, which is the other big change coming to Samoa and to the pulp mill, which, like, who would have thought that this area, that pulp mill would end up becoming such a happening spot. But
the people who did think that were the people who made the leap to make it happen, right?
Yeah, which is, like you said, it was a risk with that ended up really paying off. But so Nordic Aqua Farms taking over the old pulp mill site, and this is, you know, probably going to be the largest, you know, development in Humboldt for many years.
Since the pulp mill.
Yeah, pretty much since the pulp mill,
Pulp mills. And again, you know, I have gray on my face, and I remember as a kid, you know, coming up to Eureka from Southern Humboldt, which is a big effing deal, right? Woo, big city. And you know, you drive. My dad was always say, "Well, we're getting close to Eureka. You can smell the poop mills." I mean, this town stunk. I mean, it stunk.
Yeah.
And so, but those were the last big effort, and that started with, you know, developing an infrastructure with the development of the Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District and the creation of Ruth Lake and the, you know, the dam and all that to supply water, not only for the municipalities, but more importantly to supply industrial water. They built the infrastructure to get those pulp mills here. Yeah, and so, you know, they outlived their usefulness, and they were too small, and they were environmentally just horrible. And, you know, Evergreen Pulp just sort of left and left a big mess. There was another company that bought the property hoping that it could restart it, but it was just too much for them. And so it sat there dormant with, you know, tens of millions of gallons of highly toxic everything left behind, and the Harbor District moved forward. So now Nordic, you know, negotiating, working with the Harbor District and everybody else to complete the process of cleaning that site up. I mean, they're going to, it's all that old buildings and crafts and the boilers and everything else, not to mention everything else that's, you know, in the ground that might be remaining, it's going to be cleaned up, and they're going to build a new facility. And I think it's great. You know, there are environmental concerns that some people have. I think they're pretty on the margins, quite honestly. And they've agreed to do a full EIR. So, you know, there was a, you need to do a full EIR. And they made the great move of not, like, resisting. They said, okay, sure. That's what we want. We'll do it.
Yeah, it seems like you know, more environmental types are getting on board. Like, no, this could be okay. We might be able to sign off on this.
Well, and you know, and when you do an EIR, you have to look at alternatives, right? And so, what's the no project alternative?
It just sits
the thing sits fallow, right? I mean, who else are there? You know, it's not like we have a whole list of companies that are willing to come in and spend $500 million cleaning up an old pulp mill and building a facility that will provide 150 jobs, right? Okay. It's like that list is pretty short. And quite honestly, if Nordic gets, you know, not approved, that list will become non-existent. They're like, because people in the industry will look and say, this company came in, did a full EIR, and the community said no, because that's the only way they can leave, really, is, you know, if we say no, or unless there's a business problem. But, you know, it's like, oh, we're not going there. This community got a great offer here, and they chase them out. So
And like you just said,
we're stuck with a pulp mill for the rest of our lives.
Well, we just really don't want these big city folks coming in with their big city ideas and ruining changing our pulp mill.
I mean, we will be cleaning up the pulp, the perfect post-apocalyptic music video background.
It's great.
That's true.
Yeah.
And like you said that, I mean, this is going to be a good, really good, you know, for our area too, because you just said it's going to create 150 jobs.
Yeah, permanent jobs. They said about 300 jobs are in construction, you know, and then, you know, they're saying 150 permanent jobs going forward. And that's direct. And then, of course, you got all the vendors and everybody else that's supplying stuff and trucking and all that great stuff. So,
Okay, Goff, so you live in Humboldt, right?
That's true.
So you know that you're, like, legally required to enjoy hiking, right?
I know that I can face prison time if I don't go on hikes regularly. Yes.
That is just a fact. That's a fact. But have you ever gone hiking with a llama?
No. What am I doing with my life?
Well, you know, you can do that now by booking a tour with Luna's Llama Adventures and reserve a llama trek for a day, 2 days or more. They also even offer shorter llama visits for your special events. It's amazing.
That is legitimately amazing.
Yeah. So visit lunaslamaadventures.com for more information and to book your amazing llama encounter today.
So, well, next on my list is offshore wind. And this one seems like it's more in the beginning stages than the others we've listed. Yeah. But it does have the support of both the governor and the Biden administration. Obviously, this also would be good for jobs. But like, what are you hearing about the likelihood of this ever actually happening?
Well, you know, that's one of those ones where we're really looking at long term, right? And we have two great assets here for wind, one of which is we have wind.
Yeah. It's kind of steady, key.
Strong wind offshore, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the thing. And so there's this what's called BOEM, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management or something like that. And they have these large leases that they're going through the lease process that you can get these large leases for areas out in federal waters. And so we have Great Wind. We have the whole process there where you can lease this. And like they just approved the first ones on the East Coast. So they're proving that, you know, the technology is still in the proving stage, although there's operating commercial wind farms off of the coast of Europe and Scandinavia. But what's really cool is we also have a harbor, and I think I could be wrong, but I think we're the only like deep water commercial harbor that doesn't have a bridge over the entrance in California, right? Because we have San Francisco Bridge and the Bay Bridge and all these others. Yeah. And so you can like move in and out really tall stuff. And, you know, so when you're constructing and moving out or even bringing in to repair and replace and do other work for these large offshore wind rigs, they can't fit under bridges, right? So we have this nice open bay entrance, and we have all this land out there at the, you know, out in the harbor that can be repurposed for that kind of thing. You know, the old log decks, and, you know, we used to have, you know, acres and acres and acres and acres of all that other stuff here. Yeah. So it's really cool. You know, internationally, you know, billions of dollars are being spent on developing this technology. And so, you know, we have another, again, it's all about competitive advantage, right? What's our competitive advantage? People, you know, often will say, we need to get this kind of business here. And I'll say, why would they be here? What is the competitive advantage of them being here? Well, again, we have a competitive advantage here. We have a lot of wind, some of it coming from your guests today.
And it's very like, as you have been talking about all of this, I earlier you Goff asked about, you know, with the broadband, like why Humboldt, and I just keep finding myself thinking that more like do you with the Redwood Regional Economic Development Commission, to say the whole name again. Do you guys like try to convince some of the companies like this to come here?
We certainly support, you know, I mean, so it just depends on who we're talking to and what they need, right? So I talk a lot with the folks with Nordic, right? And they're like, okay, so we want to make sure we're being good to the community. Who should we talk to? What are the things that you need, you know, and all that? And they have a community liaison here in Lynette Mullen, who is, you know, they really put someone on the ground. The broadband folks, you know, we jump on board. We kind of follow Connie's lead in terms of community involvement. And Vero, you know, we had a get together last week with the folks from Vero who came out, and you know, it's like, okay, so what is it do you need? Do we need to push something regulatorily? Do we need to, you know, and so it kind of varies on what the question is. The Flying Humboldt thing, you know, is probably where we're most involved in business attraction. And I keep telling people, you know, this is a business attraction program, you know, because we often get, well, why don't you add this? Well, I don't do it. It's the airlines. Well, why don't you tell them this? Well, you don't tell them this. They're a company that's choosing to do business here. And unlike other companies, it's really easy for them to leave because they basically take the main asset of their company away from here every day. So you know, it's not like Nordic would say, well, we're mad, we're picking up our $400 million fish facility and we're going to another community. You know, it's like, no, that's not gonna happen. But the airline literally can say, you know, we don't like it, we're gone. So
right. Yeah.
So it just, you know, we really do, you know, when we're in contact with everybody here, you know, all these projects, we're involved in one way or another, and it's really what they need, and we try to fill in. And especially since we have a link to all the elected officials that we do, the 15 different jurisdictions, you know, we can say, okay, you know, we need letters of support. We need you guys been on board. Let's talk about this, you know, whatever they need, we're asking for.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, get back to the list focus, the list. But it's kind of relate. It's related here because I do think that, you know, in a way with just all these projects that are happening now, it's just sort of lucky that our location, you know, is kind of just desirable for some of these things. And I think that something that people are talking about a lot right now, as far as an impact and an economic impact on our area, is that, you know, as the rest of the state is growing unbearably hot and, you know, even unsafe in the summer because of wildfire conditions, right. You know, that people are really going to be seeking Humboldt as a climate refuge, you know, and that we have this location on the coast, cooler climates, that, you know, is making us really appealing. And,
right. And, you know, and that was already happening, you know, prior to COVID. And certainly, you know, we were talking to, you know, I remember talking to a lot of people who were kind of refugees from the North Bay and Santa Rosa who were coming up here. And there's like, we're tired of being evacuated every year. And I understand it. I mean, I have family down there. That's where my family originates, is Sonoma County from a gazillion years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my uncle, who's, you know, born and raised there, he says, I'm really tired of having to evacuate every year. You know, he's 75 years old. And yeah, so it hurts. You know, people are like, we want to move to a place that we don't have to, like, be in fear every fall. You know, it's like, well, that's fair. But what COVID has done, too, which is really interesting, I think it's really triggered the idea, and I was in San Francisco last weekend, and, you know, there's a lot of discussion on the radio and news down there. It's like, financial district's a ghost town. And there's some discussion about, it may always be a ghost town. All of a sudden, we figured out that we can do work from home or remotely, you know, from a remote locations that are smaller. And boy, that sure saves a lot of money, because we aren't paying all these high rents and we don't have to, you know, have people coming in and out. And so, you know, when you look at, I'm looking up some housing stats I used in my presentation that I developed yesterday for our airline. You know, in April, this is from the Humboldt Association of Realtors. In April, the median days on market homes in Humboldt County was 9. So 9 days between listing and selling, basically, that's or crazy. Listing, you know, getting under contract. And so last year it was 27, but, you know, years before it was like, I would see like, you know, 90 days and 100 days on the market, you know. And, you know, the median price of single family home a year ago was 317. In April of this year, it was 425. Last year, there are 328 listings at the end of April, and this year is 157. So you can see what's happening is sales are up, inventory is down, prices are going up. Yeah. And that's the thing that we really need to start working on here now. I think we're getting a lot of the economic growth. There's a lot of job openings out there, but our housing is bad, and we need to really be serious about that, not only from a sort of humanitarian angle, but also from an economic development angle, because that's probably the biggest drag right now on our economy, in my opinion.
Yeah, and too, for like, you know, and for people that have lived here and want to continue living here, it seems like, you know, while we're listing this as a positive, we could see a very Humboldt specific kind of gentrification start to happen here, where they're just like, you know, there just is nowhere to live as all these people are trying to come here.
Right.
So yeah, we got to get that housing stock handled. And obviously, you know, we've been doing a lot of reporting on the city of Eureka, trying to, you know, build some lower income housing for people. But
well,
yeah,
affordable housing too, right? It's not, you know, and I see people, oh, we're going to put homeless in these shacks downtown on the, and it's like, no, I mean, you can have incomes up to like $70,000 for some of these places. And I've asked the city, I said, you know, can you provide us information on, you know, what are the types of incomes and the types of people who will be eligible to get into this housing, right? And it's really quite honestly, a lot of the people who work right around the neighborhood of this housing. And so there are valid concerns about losing the parking and et cetera downtown. I totally agree, and let's work through that. But where I get really concerned is where he's talking about those kinds of people and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, My degree back in the day was political science with a kind of an urban policy focus and looking at land use. And you know, we did a really great job, like every other city in the 50s and 60s, of driving housing out of downtown and out into the burbs, this sort of new model that really destroyed downtowns, quite honestly. And so now, you know, a lot of cities, including us, because we are a small city in many ways, are looking about how do we revitalize downtown neighborhoods. Jane Jacobs, who wrote this sort of seminal book on the life and the death of the American city, she's a New York activist back in the early 60s, you know, talks about the eyes on the street, right? And so you want to get crime down, put people there that live at night and have the lights on and are able to keep an eye on things. And that's how you do a lot of this work. And so you're seeing that across California. now. And what's spurring it also, and why the city is being so aggressive on this, is not only because it's good for the economy and good for people, but the state is becoming much more serious about stepping into local jurisdictions where housing is not being developed and sort of taking over that process and saying, well, if you're not going to do it, cities and counties, then we're going to do it for you because housing is a big issue.
Mm. Okay, so this next item on my signs of hope list might not have the same kind of financial stakes as the ones we've listed so far, but it's definitely the most fun. And it's one I know you had a hand in. Dick Taylor Chocolate is building a chocolate factory on the Eureka waterfront. Is this the stuff dreams are made of, Greg?
It is. I already have my Oompa Loompa costume.
Good. Yeah. I've seen you wearing it.
So I will be
there
providing
the
tours
shanty
on Saturday at from 4 to 7. That's super cool. And they're doing great. A small company that started kind of as a hobby, and they're spending real money. Redeck did provide a significant amount of financing for that. And that's going to be an amazing spot. And it's going to be shared with Humboldt Bay Coffee Company. Who's got a big banner on the building now. So that's kind of exciting. You can't see it from the outside because they're working on all the interior. The interior is amazing.
It is the stuff
dreams are made of.
I'm very excited about that. I hope that we see more of the buildings that we already have and place getting some new use.
And we did a loan for the Scotia Inn with the folks from Humboldt Bay Social Club that are redoing the Scotia Inn and now the Scotia Lodge. We're looking at another one down in Scotia right now. These are the kind of project I really like. Oh, and we just approved a loan. Our loan committee just approved. It goes to our executive committee tonight. To buy the old, what we called the Heroin Hilton, right, downtown. So we're doing financing for the Jefferson School folks, the West Side Community Improvement Association. They're going to buy the old Heroin Hilton there across from the Shanty and north of 4th. And their plan is to turn it into a nice traveler's hostel, kind of in the European model. And we're very excited about that. So we've provided financing for the purchase and some construction on that. And we hope that in a couple of years, that's going to be a real gem.
I wonder if they'll keep the name Heroin Hilton. Like that sounds like kind of a fun
focus groups, and she's not testing well.
I thought that maybe for like the young hip kids, hipsters might come in. Like I want to stay in a hostel called the Heroin Hilton. It's like ironic.
Try all this stuff. It's just. There's just not testing well among the.
So with the Dick Taylor coming in, you know, that'll be like a nice anchor for that, kind of stretch of the Eureka waterfront where it seems like there's been, starts and stops on, developing that, section between like C and F. I don't know. Why can't we get stuff happening there? In your estimation,
a million reasons. I mean, there was a project there that was 20 years ago. I think you guys still have the architectural model in the loco offices.
Oh no! Somebody came and collected.
We finally got rid of it. Donated it to the drafting department of College of the Redwoods.
Oh, sweet, perfect.
Yeah, so now it's being used to teach help teach. Yeah,
like this is where dreams go to die.
Lawsuits around that, and that was in the redevelopment agency, and then the redevelopment agencies were dissolved. The city lost some of its tools to help develop that, and so I'm hopeful that there will be opportunities coming soon for development there. I would love housing there, but it's in the coastal zone and they really discourage housing development.
That's why it's tough.
One of those rules that it makes sense on a statewide basis, but when we look at specific communities like ours, it's like it doesn't really make sense. You'd rather have an empty, fenced off lot than housing.
Right. They are doing one of the parking lots down there now near the Adoring Center that is going to be housing. And I've seen some of the project, like proposed projects, have been kind of mixed like use. I think that can be allowed. I don't know. I mean, sometimes housing is allowed in the coastal zone. It's just like,
I think you do some stuff.
I don't know.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Tourism serving down.
Right. And those always seem like really good projects. But like Andrew was saying, for whatever reason, they just don't seem to pan out.
Yeah, it seems like, when we're ready to go, then like a recession hits or a lawsuit hits or the redevelopment agency is gone or whatever else. Right. And so, we're kind of stumbling along it's a jewel, right? And I suspect that, they always say, capital flows towards there's perceived value. And I think that as we see more and more of this stuff happening, it's like in the airlines when people say, well, when you get one service, that discourages other people. And it's like, no, they see a service, they think there's value there, then they come in. And so I think that happens with investment. I mean, I know it happens with investment where there's perceived value, then the capital and the ideas start to flow towards that. And so I think as Eureka sort of goes through this renaissance, and not just Eureka, but the whole region, really, there is going to be more perceived value and more people looking to invest here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, then this last thing on our list is our gift to you, Greg. Can you please list all of the wonderful places Humboldt residents can fly now?
Oh, sure. we have now 5 destinations being provided by 3 airlines. So with United, you can fly to San Francisco, LAX, or Denver. With American Airlines, you can fly to Phoenix, and we have once a day service right now to Phoenix, and starting August 17th, we'll have 2 a day to Phoenix. And that's an American hub. So you connect into their network with a lot of, you know, I think they have like over 100 different destinations out of Phoenix. So it's really nice. Yeah. And then with Avelo, our new airline, new to us and new to the world, you can fly to Hollywood Burbank.
Yeah. Yes, which I will be doing next month, just so you know. Oh, nice. I jumped on those cheap Avelo tickets.
Yeah, $24 there.
It was, the
fares are really cheap. And it's an what we call a ULCC, ultra low cost carrier. And so their model is really that low, keeping those fares as low as they can. And so they've been very pleased. They're both the American and Avelo launches have been very strong. People are really using them.
Yeah.
Cody Ruggis at the airport sent me some numbers the other day, and I was just like, wow, this is great. And you know, when they start strong like that, then they start looking at, well, how much further we can push this? And we just completed a study. We got a Headwaters grant from the County of Humboldt at REDEC, and then we hired a consultant to do our market study for us, which we do about every 5 or 6 years. And it really shows some strong potential for even more growth up here. So we're excited.
They have that introductory $24, you know, one way rate. I was looking at. I think it goes to September. Do you know what it goes up to after the fun period stops?
$1 million.
Okay, $1 million flights. So back to what it was before. Then you mean?
No. I mean, their company strategy is to keep their fares as low as they can,
okay,
right?
Cool.
They're competing in that space. Yeah. I can't tell you what it'll be, but I would expect 100-150 round trips.
Okay.
I would guess.
I didn't get no $24 flight.
They have these promo fares, but it's not every seat, right? And so when they'll sell out, Southwest will say, hey, $49, you can fly across the country. And you like rush to the website and it's like, sorry, sold out.
Right.
It's like, 5 seats at that price are gone.
Yes. It was like $50 each way. So
which is still a great,
which is still
that's
that cheap.
Pretty, right? It's pretty cheap. I'm taking my mom. I was like, this one's on me. I'm just I can buy you a ticket.
But no check bag, mom. Sorry, you gotta
that's the thing is that they charge you for the bag.
Bring your big purse. Yeah.
They actually charge you more for a carry-on than a checked bag, which was kind of that annoyed me slightly, but it's still cheaper.
Well, and there's some strategies and reasons why they do that, you know. But it has to do with the quick turns and all that they try to do. And you've been on planes where it's like, you know, ladies and gentlemen, can you please take your seats? Can you someone's trying to stuff a bag that's like 3 times the size of
totally. I understood the reason
and that menu pricing. So those low-cost carriers, and that's the JetBlues and the I'm not sure Frontier does this, but Spirit certainly they do what's called menu pricing, right? So when you buy from the legacies, you're like all in, and then upgrades. On this one, it's like, do you want this,
yeah,
adds up. I think pressurized cabin is an extra $50.
Do you want to just fly on strapped to the wing? That's what you get for the $24.
It's 737. It's nice and big. It's just they have very low costs and they keep their costs low and they pass those savings on to you, the customer.
Yeah.
Great. So that's our list. And I know you have to go here in a minute, but is there anything else that you is kind of on your radar that you think deserves inclusion?
You know, I have a slide in a presentation I do that says unprecedented changes require unprecedented thinking, right? And I think, you know, our biggest challenge that faces us now is that we have to really understand what our issues and challenges and opportunities are going forward. And they have nothing, they really aren't what we're looking at and what we've done in the past, right? And this county is slow to pivot to, which is the new word, right? To sort of new approaches. And that's more of a cultural thing. I'm not being critical of any individual organization, but when we started in when I started in economic development like 30 years ago, right? It was like, create jobs, create jobs, create jobs. We need more jobs. We create jobs. That's what you do. You create jobs, more business. You know, that was just mantra. We tried to do that. Now economic development, we're saying housing, and those things have not really been married as well in the past as they should, but housing is infrastructure, right? So in economic development, it was like one of the ways we create jobs is by investing in the infrastructure to support those businesses. Well, right now, the businesses, and I'm seeing, you know, restaurants that are closed, you know, saying, well, we don't have enough staff to be open this many times, you know, and big companies too, manufacturers. I talked to a manufacturer the other day and they're just like, you know, and it's a big manufacturer. And I was like, you know, what, you know, they set up the meeting and it's like, well, what is it why are we having this meeting? He goes, we need to talk about housing because we can't get workers for housing. And you're seeing wages go up, you know, as well. So, for the success, there are obviously consequences and we need to look at the housing as an economic development strategy, not just a person strategy, a people strategy. And then things like, you know, I'm kind of on this kick personally, this is not a REDEC thing, but creating an airport authority so that the airport can act quickly in a more business-like fashion than it has before. It's part of the county and the county's made some good moves in terms of creating as its own department separate from the county and all that. But really, the governing board of the airport is the governing board of the county. They got a million things on their plate, right? And so for the airport to try to get itself as a priority, they got to sort of wiggle in with all the other priorities that are going on at the county. Crescent City and Del Norte years ago created an airport authority. So while the county still owns the airport, it's in a separate authority, its own separate bureaucracy. That can act and act much more quickly and business-like, because that's what airports are. They really are just big business organizations. Mm-hmm. They need to act really quick. You need to have an airport director that can make the decisions without having to run through everything through the board supervisors or the HR department and all this other stuff. You know, it's like that industry acts very quickly and we need to do that. Again, not a criticism of a person or organization. And it's big enough and important enough and different enough from the way the rest of the county operates that it needs to be its own thing, in my opinion.
Just out of curiosity, is there any bar in the airport now?
So I shall note without opinion.
For no reason in particular.
I shall note without expressing opinion, I'm merely reporting the news here, right?
Yes.
In January of 2016, the county allocated $250,000 to rehab that space and get a new operator in.
Mm-hmm.
So in January of 2016, the county.
You want to say that? You want to say it again?
Just in January, I think it was January 19th, 2016, the county allocated $250,000 to get that space up and remodeled and ready for a new operator.
No end to that sentence.
I haven't been in there lately, but I don't
know.
There
okay.
I don't think
all right. Give Greg a place to drink at the airport.
Okay. Well, with all these great new airlines and everything, maybe we will see this happening.
Well, that's what I'm hoping. And that's kind of right. One of the reasons why I really advocate for the authority is just that it was left up to Public Works to get this project moving. Public Works has a million things on its plate, and it's not fair, quite honestly, to either entity, the airport or Public Works, to sort of try to elevate that project above, you know, whatever else they're dealing with, right? And it just gets lost in the shuffle. So that's why you need an organization that can solely focus not on the, just the airport, but there's six airports in the county system. All of them are subject to lots of deferred maintenance and everything else. So for me, you know, that's kind of a narrow thing. I quite honestly, I'm passionate about housing right now, from a societal standpoint, from a fairness to people, but people being able to live in nice places that they can afford, on a variety of salaries, and for the good of our local businesses, we need to get super serious about developing housing here.
Absolutely.
Well, Greg, I know you have to go. I want to just thank you for coming in here and sharing your expertise. Anytime. Humboldt County has a lot to look forward to, and I look forward to the day when we can clink a glass in the airport before we fly to some wonderful place.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Greg.
Maybe I'll buy the airport bar. Maybe we'll get it set up and I'll run.
This is what we're talking about.
My two
I like passions, this.
Bars and airports.
Fastas.
Greg, fly on in.
Here's hoping. All right. All right, Greg.
Hey, it was a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Be seeing you at the shanty.
We'll talk to you later.
All right.
I'll be there.
All right. Well, thank you so much to Greg Foster, Executive Director of REDEC. I'm just going to do the shortened name that time because the full name is too long, for talking to us today. And I think the consent, and I think that the answer is to what we were wondering is yes, Greg is very optimistic about all the things coming to to Humboldt. He actually does seem like a pretty happy man.
Jolly.
And, you know, go ahead and, you know, take a flight to Phoenix or Denver or somewhere.
You don't got a mask there.
You have the mask on the plane, but but do all your drinking before you leave, because there's no bar at the airport right now. All right. Thank you, Humboldt, for listening, and goodbye.
Okay, Steph, so you've been telling me about Luna's Llama Adventures, whereby I can rent a llama to go hiking for a day or overnight. Mm-hmm. But let's say I've broken my legs, or maybe you've broken my legs because I've interrupted you on the podcast, as I tend to do, and I can't go hiking. Maybe I'm having a party, a celebration at my estate. And I want to spice it up a little.
You want to break your legs a little bit more.
Let's say I want to spice up my party with some llamas. Is that something that Luna's Llama Adventures would help me out with?
Why, Andrew, yes. Yes, it is. You're in luck, because after I have broken your legs, I am so kind as to bring some llamas to your party to say that I'm sorry. You can book a llama encounter for your next party or special event, and you will be the talk of the town, of whatever Humboldt town you live in, I guarantee. Check out lunaslamaadventures.com to find out more and book your llama visit or trek today.
I tell you, these llamas are really going to help me get over the violence that you've inflicted upon me. So I appreciate it.
Nothing says, sorry, I broke both of your legs, like a visit from a llama. Everybody knows that.
And add.